Would like to call to order this hearing of the Tax Reform Division of the Senate Committee on Taxes, Thursday, January 15th. The first bill on our agenda is Senate File 48, Senator Bach. Senator Bach?
Madam President, thank you for the early hearing this morning. Madam Chair and committee members, this was drafted in the House, and my House member sent it over, and so it needs an oral amendment.
Yes, I understand that, Senator Bach. Would you carry
So, Madam President, I would move on line 2.1, delete 2015, and insert 2016.
Someone else in the motion. Everybody clear on that amendment? Senator Skoy moves the correcting of the date, just mentioned by Senator Bach. Senator Skoy, would you just read that again for us officially here?
Madam Chair, I would move that on
2.1.
Line 2.1, we would change 2015 to 2016.
All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Senator Bach.
Madam President, I've never been in front of the
here.
Reform Committee before, so I'm all confused about president
here,
and
I'm
making motions
here
myself.
Here I'm chair, not president. You just did that again.
I know you like to be president.
I know I do. Today I will be, too.
I'd like to be able to tell you it was kind of an error, but it wasn't really an error. Anyway, Madam Chair and members, just to give you a little geography to know where Proctor is, if you drive up 35W and you start getting close to Duluth, Spirit Mountain is on your right. There's an exit for Spirit Mountain. Proctor is on your left, kind of on the hill before you go down into, before you approach where you can see down into Duluth. It's very much a suburban community of the city of Duluth, and interestingly enough, there actually is a pretty significant neighborhood that I would argue looks like Proctor to me. It is in Proctor, but somehow it's Duluth Real Estate, and I think it's called Bayview Heights, I think is the name of it. You would never think it was part of Duluth, but Duluth and Proctor are closely aligned. They share a border. The city of Duluth was the first city in the state to implement a local option sales tax. The city of Duluth actually had one before the state had a sales tax. And for that reason, the city of Duluth has the only sales tax in the state, local option sales tax, that actually goes into their general fund. But forever, the residents of Proctor, when they shop in Duluth, have been paying Duluth's local option sales tax. And recently, when I was a member of the other body, we gave the authority to Hermantown to enact a local option sales tax of up to 1%. They have done that. So both the city of Hermantown, which also shares the border with Proctor, Duluth and Hermantown kind of wrap around Proctor, have a 1% local option sales tax. When those Proctor residents shop there, and those are the big retail centers in the area, both of them. You think of Hermantown, it's that area up north of the mall. In just the mall is almost a dividing line in Duluth where you enter Hermantown. Have a 1% local option. Proctor has a 0.5% and are here to ask you for the additional half so that they would be on par with their neighbors who are already charging 1%. I think it's a reasonable request. I have officials from the city of Proctor here to issue.
Thank you, Senator Bach. Welcome to the committee, Councilmember Benson and Deputy Administrator Peterson. Who would like to go first?
Madam Chair?
Sir, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, committee members. I'm Jake Benson. As the Senator mentioned, I am a city councilor. I'm also a former mayor, and I own three businesses. I'm a two-term president of the Chamber of Commerce, and I kind of give you this preview of my obituary for nothing more than to let you know that in small little Proctor, I speak to a lot of people, one of whom is here with us today, Bob Wilkie, and being conceived, born, and bred in the town, people have told me that we have some serious challenges that need some serious solutions, and they look at a sales tax to help. This proposal has been discussed, debated, and dissected for 3-4 years. We need our local government aid. It's been a godsend. It's allowed us to keep our property taxes below 2% for the past 5 years. It's been wonderful. But the sales tax proposal would bring us in line with those two other cities, Duluth and Hermantown, which borders us on three sides with their 1%. Voters know that this proposal will make a tremendous difference, which is why they supported it to the tune of 78%. We need this because over 20% of the land in Proctor is owned by the railroad. The developable land in Proctor is owned by the railroad, which means it can't be developed. And their property taxes are far less than commercial or real estate businesses. Duluth owns 80 acres of some of the most valuable land in Proctor, in the city of Proctor, and they don't pay sales taxes. We have three motels which rent 61,320 rooms a year that are booked. And that averages out to about 115,000 people spending a night in town every year, creating wear and tear in our city streets, our public buildings, and our parks. Our water system is over 100 years old. Our rest of the infrastructure is about 65-60% of our roads need reconstruction. We've identified over $10 million in high priority capital projects that are needed, and that's well beyond the reach of the pocketbooks of a city of 3 square miles with 3,000 people. During the past 15 years, the cost of fixing those streets have increased, but not as fast as our sales tax revenues, local government aid, which again has been a godsend and has helped, and the ability to assess property owners and to keep up with the citizens' desires to fix our basic needs, the property taxes would have to go up 17%. This is a fairness issue set against our adjoining cities of Hermantown and Duluth, both, as Senator Buck has said, have a 1% sales tax. Our citizens, our voters, have stepped forward with this landslide vote saying, this is something we need. This is what's fair, and we hope that you could add your vote to theirs. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember Benson. Are there questions or comments for Councilmember Benson? If not, Mr. Peterson, if you'd identify yourself, please, for the record.
Sure. I am Tim Peterson. I'm the Deputy Administrator for the City of Proctor. I'd first like to thank you for taking the time to hear our proposed sales tax bill this morning. As mentioned, the City of Proctor currently does have a 0.5% sales tax that is benefited our community greatly. It's lowered costs of road construction projects, as well as saving our residents annual assessment fees along the way. It has provided our community with a community center that is being utilized to its full capacity. The revenue from our existing sales tax goes towards paying off the bonds of these projects that I've mentioned. The bonds will not be paid off for another 11 years, thus tying up much of these needed funds for ongoing barriers that we have in our community. Annually, the City of Proctor sends out a survey to residents to get feedback on our services, such as police, fire, EMS, snow removal, etc. The number one response each year, every single year, is the need to improve our infrastructure. We have come to a crossroads with a number of projects in our community that need our attention. Unfortunately, the rising costs for these projects have stalled them out. For example, we have 1/4-mile project right now that is estimated to be over $1 million. We have another 0.5-mile project that's estimated to be over $2 million. The annual assessments for these projects will push our residents out of their homes. We've held public hearings for these projects, and their understanding of the need is there. However, the costs simply outweigh what our residents can handle. We are also currently partnering with our neighboring communities, Hermantown and Duluth, to connect major parks and trails through our communities. The public hearings for these are also very well attended and have great passion associated with them. Again, though, the cost for these projects will outweigh what our residents can afford. This additional 0.5% sales tax is exactly what our community needs and is voted to approve to the tune of 4-1. The proceeds would increase our community sales tax revenues by approximately $190,000. These funds would be utilized for public infrastructure such as roads and water and sewer services, as well as parks and trails. If not passed, our community, as mentioned before, would need to look at raising property taxes about 17% to cover the costs or the revenue associated with this. The additional sales tax revenue could not come at a better time as well. If passed, we would be able to look at staggering our projects and being paid off in a way that we're always looking to the future projects. As the funds become unrestricted from a project, we're able to reassign them to the next improvement, extending the benefit of this of passing this bill from a short-term highlight to a ongoing benefit to our community and to our region. Our residents know that visitors and tourists use and wear down our roads, and they have come to the conclusion that it is their responsibility as well as ours to keep our community strong. Join our residents in supporting this bill and allow us to add an additional 0.5% sales tax. Again, thank you for hearing from us this morning, and we appreciate your consideration.
Are there comments or questions for Mr. Peterson? Comments or questions on the overall bill before I call on Senator Bach for a final comment? Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Bach, as much to you as to the individuals who represent other cities around the state, we spend, you know, $500+ million trying to equalize taxes through AIDS programs in Minnesota. And as some communities, and I sympathize with Proctor being that their close neighbors have these sales taxes, but as some communities have a local option sales tax and others don't, it tends to make the disparities even greater. And we have encouraged communities when they possible to work on a regional basis for regional projects. And we did this last year with Brainerd and Baxter. We have done that with regard to St. Cloud and the surrounding communities of that area. Now, I understand that Duluth has a different sales tax, and it's going to add some challenges to a regional project in this area because Duluth can use their sales tax differently than other communities can. But I am concerned about the path that we're going down with the local option sales tax as a funding mechanism if we're going to continue to have this large effort to equalize services around the state. And so we will take a look at this. I would encourage you to try to do some collaboration with your neighbors to see if there are some regional projects you can work on with your sales tax revenues. But for the smaller communities to come for sales tax revenues, I think it just makes more disparities and not less, and that is a concern that I have on these projects. I don't know if Senator Bach, if you want to comment or not. But.
Well, thank you, Senator Skoy. Senator Bach.
Madam Chair, that is kind of always been the position of the Senate Tax Committee. I think during my time here, I've always been very cautious about these. Let me just say, oftentimes the question gets asked. I always ask it when my communities come to me and are considering the idea of a local option. What's the support of the business community in the community? I think that is critically important. And I've straight out told two of the communities I represent that until their local chambers support the idea of a local option, I am not going to introduce a bill for them. And got a couple of communities and city councils that are kind of disappointed by that position, but that's always how I felt. There needs to be broad support. The good news about the Proctor proposal is not only did the Chamber of Commerce pass a resolution supporting this, they actually put paid ads in the Proctor paper when the advisory referendum was held last fall that ended up passing in support of the sales tax. That actually passed by 78% vote. Now, I don't like when communities do advisory referendums. I encourage them not to, because I think it puts out some expectation when elected officials come here then. But they did do it. They actually were willing to spend money to promote it. So I think that sends us a message about the level of support.
Thank you, Senator Bach. Further comments? If not, Senator Skoy. Goy moves that Senate File 48 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. As amended. All those in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails.
Thank
you very much, Senator Bob.
Thank you.
Next on our agenda is Senate File 16, Senator Wieger. Senator Wieger, do you need any amendments to your bill?
Madam Chair, I don't.
Okay. Then please proceed with presenting it.
Thank you. Madam Chair, division members, Senate File 16 addresses estate taxation, an issue which you're very familiar with. The bill would establish a single exclusion rate of $5 million. It would establish a single rate of 16% for any amount in excess of $5 million that's taxable in the Minnesota estate. And because of the threshold change, it would remove the reference to the qualified small business and qualified farm property subtraction. The proposal would be effective for states where the decedent died January 1, 2015 or thereafter. The proposal has been before the committee before. You've made good progress in discussing this, and the need is still there. It was called to my attention during the summer again by my first witness, Bruce Mogren. There's a picture I believe is being distributed. We have some copies of many of the Mogren brothers. And the strongest appeal I would make on the need for this is for keeping family businesses, maybe family farms, others, together. And by not having this exclusion, it does put at risk many of these partnerships that are in place. I've known the Mogren family for at least four decades. They're pillars of the community in the Northeast metro area, just as you have families like that in your own districts. They have worked with the soil. They have put a lot of equity into those businesses, multi-generational. They give very generously to our communities, and they want to stay in Minnesota. They want the business to continue. So, Madam Chair, I am going to ask Bruce Mogren, representing the Mogren family, his brother Keith's here, to provide support to give testimony. Then we'll have some concluding remarks from Beth Cadoon from the Minnesota Chamber. There are others here as well that, if need be, I wanted to thank the Society for CPAs, Gino Fragnito, the Independent Business Federation, Mike Hickey, and also thank Senator Karen Housley for being a co-author. So, Madam Chair, if Bruce Mogren could proceed and testify.
Thank you, Senator Wieger. Do you have a House companion on this bill yet?
I do have the jackets with the author. I don't know if it's been introduced yet. It should be very soon.
Mr. Mogren, welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself for the record.
Sure. Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Bruce Mogren. I'm from the city of Grant near Stillwater, Minnesota. I'm second oldest of 12 boys, as you can tell from the picture. You know, the first thing a lot of people say is, "Your poor mother," and they would not be wrong. Mom had a dress that she kept for 22 years and never had a chance to use. But that being said, I graduated from the University of Minnesota. After serving in the Air Force, I started a career of 35 years in real estate, the first 10 years as an agent, the last 25 years in real estate development. I teamed up with my dad and many of my brothers to develop properties in the Maplewood area. Our family ancestors settled in Maplewood at the turn of the century, early 1900s. Most of our properties have been developed, have been within a mile of that homestead. Probably our biggest and proudest development is the Carefree Chateau and Villas in Maplewood. It's about 270 units of affordable senior housing. We provide housing for about 400 seniors. They're restricted on income. We're restricted on rents, and it's been an absolutely wonderful project. Great housing for them. Senator Wagner, I'm sure, can attest to that. And in this, I want to explain one thing about it, is it's very much a family-run business. My brother is a maintenance, the head of the maintenance. My daughter's on the management team. My brother, Spike, does the contracting. I have a nephew that's got CF that teaches our residents computers, works with the Wii computers. It's very much family. If a furnace goes down at midnight, Jeff goes out and fixes it. We had a pipe break here about a month ago. I dropped off my last resident at a hotel about 3 a.m. I mean, these people are our friends. And it's recently I just refinanced HUD last year with a 35-year mortgage, and so we're planning on the future. I would love to keep this right in the heart of where the Mogans are. We're very much, like Senator Wagner said, we're very much part of the fabric of the community. I mean, I've been a Rotary, I mentor high school kids. We are involved. And along the way, we also created housing, affordable housing for families. There's the city of Maplewood asked me to come in, and we created Van Dyke Village down by the city hall. We've also, by the Maplewood Mall, we created housing, 60 units for affordable families. And here's the issue. Here's why I'm here. Peter Fisher called me up. He's running for Congress, re-election. He called me up and asked if I would support his candidacy. I mean, we do have some of the best places to put signs, so I understand him, and Senator Wagner's been there before, too. When I met with Peter, I said, I have to meet with you, for I have to express some frustrations that I have as a Minnesota citizen and as a taxpayer. Within that hour of speaking with him, I said, I just went, and at my age, and we're just planning tax, we're doing tax estate planning, and I said, I met with my tax accountant about 3 years ago. He said, Bruce, he said, you have, when you pass on, you owe a death tax of between $350,000 and $400,000. I said, you're kidding. I said, how, everything that we have, I mean, I'm not, our family is not liquid. Everything is invested back into the properties. In order to have a healthy real estate investment, you have to have equity in it. It makes the numbers work. It makes things happen. And I said, and besides that, he says, you have 9 months to pay it. I go, it took me 9 months to refinance this. I don't know how I would come up with that dough. It's like, what do I have to do? We have to sell this property, or we have to sell something in order to pay the state. And I go, plus I've already paid income tax on that money. It's difficult. And I say, you know, some of my friends, I turned 66 in about 2 months. And so the people I hang with are people that are about my age. You know, so I know what's going on. I mean, besides talking about grandchildren and health ailments, we talk about what's going on. And a lot of those people have made the simple tax planning choice of leaving the state. I mean, they can go down to Florida, they can go down to several, 38 states where you don't pay this tax. It's as simple as that. Our family doesn't have that luxury. I mean, I don't... And one of the other problems was, it's just not these people just leaving. I mean, you don't have the opportunity then to tax their income for those however many years it is. But also, they're community leaders. A lot of my friends are people that are involved in the community. They do things. You're losing good residents simply because of this very burdensome tax. And it keeps me up at night. I wonder how we want to keep this family business going, and I don't know how I'm going to come up with a dough other than an expensive insurance policy, whatever. But it's tough, and that's why Senator Wagner, I saw him at a St. John's St. John's Hospital community leader meeting, and he says, Bruce, he says, I'm gonna put forward a bill to bring it up to the federal level. And I'm going, well, the federal level would be great because people like myself, people that, and my brothers, people that have worked all these years, I've worked 25 years to create something good for the community. It's not just me or us. It's we also have great housing for our residents. And so it protects that work that people have done, and it allows them to pass it on to the next generation to continue it. And it's and at that $5 million level, you know, it probably, I don't know what the statistics are, but it probably encompasses a lot of people like me and my family. That I think it's a matter of fairness. I think it's just because you have the opportunity, just because there's equity there, and you say, okay. I mean, the fact that somebody, I don't understand the fact that somebody dies where you can just, you know, take that money. I fail with the logic on the whole thing. But when I was looking at this last night, I just noticed what gave me optimism is that New York, Maryland, Tennessee, if I'm not wrong, within the last couple of years, they've all changed it to gradually get to that federal level. And the fact that Senator Wiger and Senator Housley, people from different parties, are both championing this thing, I see it. I have optimism. And I know that my friends have left because I go down and I visit them in warm climates, and it is a real situation. People are leaving the state simply for this reason. So I appreciate any support that you can give.
Thank you, Mr. Mott. Mr. Mogren, are there any comments or questions of the witness?
Well, I'm sure.
Oh, and welcome to our guest. We have a guest. I'm sorry, I didn't see you, Senator Housley. You're perfectly welcome to sit with us today. Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the witness. I was sitting here reading the definition for qualified small business property, and I don't know if you've looked at this, but for qualified farms and qualified small businesses in Minnesota, you do have a $4 million plus the one, so basically a $5 million exemption. From listening to you talk, you should probably take a look at that. I think you might qualify.
We'll take a look at it. I think, I'm not sure that real estate is an exemption in that bill. You know, it's because most of ours is involved in real estate. I'm not sure. You know, I appreciate the thought, and I will look into
take
that.
Take a look in.
Absolutely.
I would think you might want to take a little look at
Thank
it.
You.
Thank you very much. Next on the witness list is Beth Cadoon.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Cadoon, and if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Beth Cadoon. I am with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce, an organization of 2,300 businesses across the state of Minnesota. I want to thank Senator Wiger and Madam Chair for hearing the bill today. We are here to testify in support of the bill. We think this is a great step forward to increase our estate tax threshold. I just want to say that it's getting close to the federal estate tax threshold exemption, which is actually at $5.4 million. So it's not quite matching the federal level, getting very close. And if you make that step, we'd urge you to actually get to that federal estate tax threshold. What you heard from the testifier that just testified is what we've been hearing across the state of Minnesota, that Minnesota's estate tax has become making a bigger detrimental impact, and Minnesota's become more of a tax outlier in this area. We've heard from CPAs, financial planners, attorneys, and our business members on really the detrimental impact this is having. We're hearing this is really, as was mentioned, kind of that trigger, that tipping point for many individuals as they look at retirement years, and really that tipping point for them to decide to relocate outside of the state of Minnesota. As was mentioned, these individuals are many times are really great community assets. They're very involved in their communities and charitable giving, as well as the tax base that they do provide. And so we think it's unfortunate that our estate tax is having that impact. And this will become more and more of an issue as you look at our demographic changes with the baby boomers getting more and more at retirement age, that we really do want to stop that sort of incentive and want to make sure that these individuals are not have that incentive to move outside of the state of Minnesota. One thing that I would mention, Minnesota is one of 14 states that do have an estate tax still. The trend in those other states that have the estate tax is to increase that estate tax threshold to match the federal. Recently, last year, we had Maryland that increased to the federal estate tax threshold, and New York under Governor Cuomo also is phasing into the estate tax of the 5.4. So we strongly support the bill. We think this is a great step forward. We'd urge you to encourage you to include this in your bill as it moves forward. And also, just also mention that this does help really greatly reduce the administrative cost and compliance burden if we could get it to the federal level. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Cadoon. Mr. Hickey?
Oh, Madam Chair.
Senator Skoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Cadoon, because you happen to be the first testifier of the year coming forward with a support for spending some money. I would just like to mention that, we're going to see a number of these types of proposals that are going to cost some money, and I assume everybody's going to say, well, take it out of the surplus that the state has. But I would like to remind everybody that there are a lot of other demands for that. I would like to remind everybody that $600 million of that surplus was left on the bottom line from last year. So we have to be a little bit careful for spending these ongoing costs with this money that we do not know if it's ongoing yet. So if anybody, people who are coming forward with proposals that cost, this one's $150 million a biennium, perhaps some offsetting revenue might be appropriate, in so that we would have assurances that we would not be putting the state into fiscal problems in the future. And not to pick on you, Ms. Cadoon, but you just happened to be the first one. I could have waited and asked Mr. Hickey also. But I just want authors and testifiers to be contemplating that, because we're going to have a lot of these here. We don't know what the target's going to be for the tax committee yet this year, but I would like people to be aware that it's going to have to fit within the quite conservative financial constraints that we're going to place on each other for spending money this year.
Ms. Cadoon.
Madam Chair, Chair Skoy, I certainly appreciate the comments. We certainly want to make sure that the state is in strong fiscal condition. I think the great benefit of the tax committee as well is there's always opportunities to phase in, as you did with before with the estate tax threshold, to help minimize those financial impacts. And I would encourage you to look at a phase in if your targets are not quite as robust as you'd like.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If I can just weigh in, too, because we choose not to measure the potential losses or gains in how we determine fiscal notes, but there was a mention of a tipping point, which I think is very, very valid. We did increase taxes, income taxes on the upper income. We're wrestling with residency requirements that you and I are working on. And then this is just another one of those things. And what we're not measuring is if we are truly losing some of our more successful Minnesotans to other states. And and I certainly respect what Senator Skoy is talking about, but I hope we at least consider that as part of what we are making decisions on. And Senator Wieger, I thank you for bringing this one forward.
Well, Senator Gazelka, I would also remind us that not only are we looking toward the future here, but we need to also recognize the improvements we've made in the past. Mm-hmm. And certainly in 2014, we made a considerable improvement in the from the beneficiaries' point of view, from in the estate tax by increasing that threshold amount from $1 million to $2 million. We had sent the bill to the floor with $5 million and ran into fiscal constraints there, and ended up not only being able to do it at $2 million. But this is not something that we've been ignoring. for the past biennium, and as a matter of fact, we've been working very actively on it. So it's not coming
yes.
out of a box that says, why haven't you been doing something? We have indeed been doing a lot of work in this area, and including your efforts, which we appreciate.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I totally agree with that. We are keeping an eye on it.
Senator Scoy, did you have a further comment?
No, you covered it very well.
Mr. Hickey.
Madam Chair, Mike Hickey with the National Federation of Independent Business. Most of you know about our group. We represent 13,000 small businesses and farmers across the state, and we probably are the group the most affected by this issue. And I just want to thank Senator Wieger for bringing this bill forward. It represents tremendous progress. And I want to thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Scoy, and others on the committee. What you tried to do last year was tremendous progress, and what we ended up doing was significant progress. And appreciate people's concern about this issue. This bill is really going to help the generational transfer of small businesses, family-held small businesses and farms, which is just such a critical thing for when families want to keep a tradition going that are so important to those communities, be it farm or a small business, and keep that going, and to not have to worry about losing half of it, a quarter of it, buying excessive amounts of life insurance, getting involved in overly complicated trusts that people that we wouldn't consider extreme rich, they happen to have assets that get near this threshold or just over it. It'd really be nice to clear the decks on that and end that. And that's what's going on now for people who worry about just being over the threshold. And so, anyways, this would really tremendous progress on the issue, and appreciate the bill coming forward today. Really want to strongly urge, though, to take a second look or a third look at trying to close the gap to conformity rating 92% of the way there at 5 million, and we're getting very close. And I just urge you to take a second look at doing that. That would end the issue, and so that would be, you know, even more progress. But anyways, I just wanted to lend our support.
Thank you, Mr. Hickey. Comments from Mr. Hickey? Questions, Senator Scoy?
Well, Madam Chair, just a comment. I think last year as we were working on this issue, and we have had conversations about conforming with the federal requirement, I think the problem that we run into there is we have that balloon issue on the rates that comes into effect if we just have a conformity with the federal government. And that's why Minnesota set up its own criteria, is to get away from that spike in rates for the relatively smaller estates. And so I don't think we're going to conform with the federal government. What we need to do is get our exclusion in line with what the federal exclusion is, and that'll be the best solution. So when we're all thinking about this, we're going to keep a Minnesota rate or plan, but it will try to align with what the federal government is. We're not going to conform with the federal government because there's a rate issue involved with that.
Well, Senator Scoy, that's, I was referring
Mr.
to
Hickey.
The exclusion.
Okay.
Yeah, we want no part of the 50% federal rate and all the other things that exist in that law for people who are affected. And appreciate the fact the state is nowhere near that.
And Ms. Pollack, this bill does not conform to the federal system. Just raises the exclusion to the federal exclusion.
Right.
Is that correct?
Madam Chair, yes, that's correct. The base federal exclusion is $5 million, and that's indexed for inflation annually. So this does not provide an indexing for inflation mechanism.
Any other questions for Mr. Hickey?
Oh, Madam Chair.
Senator Scoy.
Could I have a question for Ms. Pollack? Part of our conversation last year revolved around the opportunity to be portable between spouses, and I don't recall where we are with that. Could you help me with where Minnesota is with regard to whether, you know, if one spouse dies, do the other spouse get to utilize their exclusion?
Ms. Pollack.
Madam Chair and Senator Scoy, this bill would not do anything to change the portability issue between spouses. Last year in the estate tax changes, we did a provision was added for the Q-tip election, which is generally the mechanism that's used to port or move assets between spouses. So this does nothing to change that.
And
Senator Scoy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Ms. Pollack, so when I'm contemplating the estate tax that a testifier or an individual would have, and part of this is my memory is not as good as it used to be, but so they eventually will have a $2 million exclusion under Minnesota law. Their spouse has a $2 million exclusion. One dies, does the other one get to use their spouse's exclusion and theirs, or just theirs? Maybe we should get that information to the committee and come back with it, because I don't remember. But I know there was conversations
Senator
about
Scoy,
that.
It's a very confusing area of the law, as yeah. you know. And we are just have just really begun digging into that over the past couple of years. But it certainly is an issue that's been brought to us. And Senator Coonan last year, too, was concerned about the yeah. portability
yeah,
issue.
Yeah, that's where it came from.
It took a long discussion from the department to even gain a beginner's understanding of that. But we do know it does have a considerable impact on, not thousands of Minnesotans. The revenue in note indicates that it would only result in 700 fewer returns. But on the economics and the investment in our state, that's where we're looking for the benefit of changes in these policies.
And, Madam Chair, my question is outside the scope of this bill. So yes.
Mr. Doug Busselman, is he here from the Farm Bureau?
I think so, but there's a lot of to do.
Welcome to the committee. If you'd identify yourself for the record, please.
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Busselman. I am the Director of Public Policy for Minnesota Farm Bureau.
Mr. Busselman.
Thank you. And we're here today to express our support for the bill and for increasing the exclusion to the $5 million level. We would like to see it be increased to the federal level, but we're certainly appreciative of this move.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Busselman or as a representative of the Farm Bureau? Seeing none, Senator Gazelka. Moves that Senate File 16 be considered for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Discussion? All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Wicker.
Thank you.
The next
Madam Chair,
bill on our agenda is Senate File 41, Senator Clausen. Senator Clausen, do you need any amendments to your bill? Then you may proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
And Division Committee members, and thank you for the opportunity to present Senate File 41, which provides for a permanent Minnesota State High School League ticket sales tax exemption.
Excuse me. Gentlemen, could you take your conversation outside of the hearing room? Senator Wicker. Senator Clausen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Minnesota State High School League currently has a sales tax exemption on admission sales to tickets for games, events, and activities sponsored by the league. And this provision is scheduled to sunset on June 30th, 2015. Senate File 41 removes the sales tax exemption sunset clause, making the exemption permanent. I'd like to provide just a very quick overview of the Minnesota State High School League. The league directs extracurricular activities in our state and is one of the leading associations in our nation. The High School League board membership is composed of school representatives from across the state. In addition, four members are appointed by the governor and two by the Minnesota School Boards Association. And the league is annually audited by the Minnesota State Auditor and reports to the Commissioner of Education. How this exemption works is the league annually calculates the amount of admission sales tax to be paid to the state and transfers that amount to the Minnesota State High School League Foundation. And the foundation directs funds to member schools via grants for special projects which support high school league activities and also assists in paying participation fees for students in need. I would like to emphasize that the sales tax exemption provides opportunities for students, opportunities to participate in athletics, debate, speech, and theater, but also to develop leadership and decision-making skills through locally developed programs. This time I'd like to turn your attention to a number of handouts that you have. There is a fiscal note. There are several letters of support, including letters from the Minneapolis Public Schools, St. Paul Public Schools, Minnesota Association Secondary School Principals, and the Minnesota School Board Association. There are also a handout with examples of foundation grant expenditures. And at this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Roger Arnson. He is the Minnesota State High School League legal counsel.
Just before that, are there any questions or comments directly to Senator Clausen at this time? Seeing none, we'll proceed with the testimony. If you'd identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Roger Arnson. I'm legal counsel and do legislative work as well for the Minnesota State High School League. Senator Clausen suggested that I give you some of the history on this exemption. This is the ninth year that the league has enjoyed this sales tax exemption. About two decades ago, high school admission tickets were exempted by the legislature from sales tax. The author at that time assumed that that was going to include high school league activities as well. Subsequently, the revenue department said, actually, no, it just covered high schools. It did not cover the postseason events that were conducted by the Minnesota State High School League. We labored for some time to get the league included in the exemption that exists for schools. And that exemption will continue regardless of any action, I mean, whether or not you take any action on that at the end of 2015. Our exemption was initially put in the Twins financing bill. It came from the House. Senator Kelly was the author of that bill in the Senate. And it was Senator Kelly's suggestion that it have a five-year sunset. And I think it's fair to say that that would be more in the line of that we would come back and make some report to say, was the money successfully spent? And in line with how you would want to have that money spent. Unfortunately, that five-year sunset ended up in the government shutdown session. And we were included, the extension of this exemption was included in the shutdown session at that time. A lot of those negotiations were done behind closed doors, and a four-year extension was added with significant support from the governor's office at that time as well, and from the majority. This has always been a bipartisan issue. One of the things I think that's important for the committee to understand is this money does not go to operating expenses for the Minnesota State High School League. Per legislative instruction, all of this money gets poured over into the Minnesota State High School League Foundation, and we return it to school districts and organizations to support high school league and extracurricular activities. There is a presumption, and this came from Senator Kelly, that the first part of this money would go to help families offset the cost of fees for participation in extracurricular. And that's the letters that you see from Minneapolis and St. Paul. We actually have a breakdown of the Senate districts of all of the members of this committee as to how those grants go. And the league distributes a significant amount of money to school districts in Minnesota based on free and reduced lunch. The league itself absorbs the costs of operation of the foundation. And so unlike typical foundations, this really runs at a zero cost. We do not maintain any of the money on an annual basis for any type of corpus long-term sort of deal. We distribute all of the money that we receive. We do it in batches of two grants as we go through the year. We're now nearing the end of this exemption. It will expire in June. We think this is a very solid policy on the part of the legislature, and so we're here to see and ask you to continue, see if we could continue this exemption, Madam Chair.
Mr. Aronson, what's happened to the prices of the tickets at your events?
Madam Chair, the organization itself has a very significant concern about ticket prices. I think realistically and as the symbol as they are for people coming to our activities. So we do our best to keep our ticket prices very low. And Mr. Sedd can tell you more about this as we visited with Senator Scoy a little bit. I think our maximum ticket to one of our premier events, which would be the state high school hockey tournament to see the two championship games of that, we charge $17. I think in today's world, that's relatively cheap. And we try to keep these tickets at low price for families that attend these events.
Mr. Aronson, some of the beneficiaries of these dollars are for to encourage students who are on free and reduced lunch to participate in these events. I would suggest to you that $17 for a ticket to go to a hockey game is prohibitive for the families of those very same students. What do you do to encourage the families to support their students who are involved in these activities so that they can sit in the stands and watch their students play?
I think that, and I'd say that's the most expensive ticket that we have for anything. I mean, the student tickets are quite a bit less, and we distribute those through the schools. The schools actually can use some of these monies if the students were coming to state tournaments, that they can use that to support them out of their own athletic budgets. I think you see some of the descriptions from St. Paul, for example, that these monies are used for transportation to get kids home, you know, from practices and those sorts of things. So we do as much as we can with them. Consistent with your question, there's some discussion in high schools right now of actually not charging for events, for high school events, in some of the more challenged districts.
Madam Chair?
Senator Dietzig, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, just one interruption. We do have that handout that was referenced by Mr. Arneson. Could I have someone pass that out, please?
Okay. The page will come in and get
thank you.
Senator Dietzig?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And just, I think that's interference, so please take your cell phones off the committee table if you want. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The handout was one of the questions I had because I didn't see it here. I just want to clarify the $17, that's not the price of the average. So if you go to your normal hockey game or your normal football game, that's just the championship game that's at Excel or wherever it's at. And then additionally, a lot of the money or some of this money, does it go to help pay for students to attend these games, or is it to help pay for them to, like you said, transportation or actually participate? Because the cost to participating in some of these sports is prohibitive. And so is it go to help them, you know, pay to go to games or more to actually participate in sports or other activities?
Madam Chair, Dave Stead, the director of the Minnesota State High School League. Senator Dietrich, to your question, during the regular season, the high school league has no control over what school districts charge for their regular season contest. That's what each individual school district does. When it comes time for postseason competition, because we don't own facilities, we must lease facilities, and therefore the cost for us to do that is significantly higher than what a local school district would have for their own particular facilities. But during the for the foundation, nearly half, in fact, a little bit more than half of the dollars we collect in taxes each year go directly back to the schools based on the free and reduced lunch students that they have in their schools. Those funds then are handled by the local athletic directors to make determinations about how those dollars will be used to help support kids to be involved in the activity programs who may not be able to afford the activity fees charged by the school districts.
Senator Dietzig.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will note that, just for the record, I see that Mr. Tucker did a letter of support for this from the Minneapolis School District, because I'm assuming that, and I know I have a lot of free and reduced lunch constituents, so I appreciate that they did send in that letter, because I did not hear from them last year. So we'll just put that on the record.
Thank you. Mr. Stee, did you have any further testimony?
Madam Chair and members, thank you very much for the opportunity again to participate and to hear the bill. I think Senator Claussen, as he did last year, identified the issues that we face from a high school league standpoint and from a foundation. A number of foundations will collect dollars from whatever sources they have, keep the dollars, and distribute a significant number of the dollars that they generate from interest. Our job each year is to return every dollar that we collect back to the member schools. I travel around the state twice a year, both in the fall and the spring, meeting with school athletic directors, encouraging them to apply for foundation grants, as well as the foundation free and reduced lunch numbers that we have each fall, so that those dollars can be returned equitably to all the schools. And that does help, in fact, provide the support that they have for their activity programs. There are two activities directors here who can speak to the issues of how those dollars are used in their communities, and I would be more than happy to answer questions that any of the members may have once they have finished their comments, if that would be appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Steed.
Thank you.
If you'd identify yourself, please.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Troy Hendricks, the activities director
Mr.
at Bemidji.
Hendricks, welcome to the committee. We're happy to have your testimony.
Thank you. As you can see on one of the handouts, we've currently received approximately $25,000 through this grant. 100% of that money has been used to allow free and reduced families to have their kids participate in our activities free of cost. Since the arrival of the grant, we have increased free and reduced kids' participation by 70%. It doesn't cover all the expenses, but our school board sees the benefit of kids participating in extracurricular activities, so they cover the rest of it. We used to reduce the fee, and currently now we eliminate it completely. And at the high school level, 9 through 12, we have 40% of our kids who qualify for free and reduced lunch. So without it, I think we'd be missing the boat on a lot of kids. I also have an initiative within our school board to increase our minority population, and this really has helped me connect with the kids and get them to participate, because as Senator Scoy can tell you, our kids travel a long ways, and transportation is a huge expense. So if I can say we're going to eliminate the cost 100% for you to participate in the activity or the sport, if you can get your son or daughter there, it has helped us. So we've definitely benefited from it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hendricks. Any questions? Ma'am, if you'd identify yourself for the record.
Madam Chair, community members, my name is Patty Weldon. I'm the activities director of Robbinsdale Armstrong High School, and I'm here to say that I've been a part of Robbinsdale School District for over 25 years as an educator, as a coach, and now as an administrator. So I've seen our community change quite a bit over the years, and we are a sister high school with Robbinsdale Cooper, and I would say their community has changed drastically as well. We have taken advantage of this grant foundation as well. And our free and reduced numbers has increased significantly over the last 10, 12 years. And there's no doubt that getting our students to participate in extracurriculars creates benefits to all these kids. And we also have the understanding that if a student wants to participate in the extracurriculars, there's nothing that's going to hold them back because of this grant money that allows them to participate. The benefits are great. And we find ways to use this money for these kids to continue to participate and have those opportunities that they would not be allowed those opportunities without this funding.
Thank you, Ms. Weldon. I'll just note that I began my teaching career in Minnesota as an English teacher at Armstrong High School, opening the school in 1970. Any other questions or comments for Senator Clausen or his testifiers? Seeing none, Senator Dietzick moves that Senate File 41. Senator Clausen, did you have any final comment before we take a motion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think we've presented Senate File 41 in great detail, and I appreciate, again, the opportunity. Last point that I would make is these funds are returned to the local communities that generated the funds, that these provide great opportunities for students to participate in what is sometimes termed not extracurricular but co-curricular activities, activities that are an important part of the overall education of a young person. And I would very much encourage you to continue the practice that we have of returning these funds so that they can be used for greater opportunities for our students. Thank you.
Senator Clausen, do you have a house companion?
Pardon me?
Is there a house companion to this bill?
Yes, there is, Madam Chair.
And has it been introduced?
That I'm not sure. If it hasn't been introduced, it shortly will be.
Okay, thank you very much. Further questions again? Senator Dietzick then moves that Senate File 41 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Discussion? All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you very much,
thank you.
Senator Clausen. Senator Gazelka brings us Senate File 40. Senator Gazelka, are there any amendments that you need to your bill?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay, then you may proceed.
Madam Chair and members, first of all, thanks for taking the time to hear Senate File 40. This particular legislation has been around a number of years. It has been bipartisan. In fact, Senator Ress, you and I are on this bill, and I just want to say before we start, I feel like this is a golden opportunity to perhaps include this in the greater omnibus bill. Many of the years that we have talked about this bill, there's been a deficit and just no way to do it. And we do have to pick which things that we are going to move forward with, you know, even when you have a surplus. But this is the perfect opportunity. And so I want to make the case again. And I think there are four testifiers that have come, some from outstate Minnesota. The bill is simple. Exempt military pensions from state income taxes. That part's simple. The cost is debatable. I believe everybody has a fiscal note, and it's $23.4 million in 2016, which is for some reason down a little bit from last year. The reason why I say debatable is because we don't consider the other things that come into play. But at least for this discussion here, I want to make sure that we do consider those things. When we don't have this and 15 other states do, and then another 18 states have significantly more exclusions, we begin to lose veterans that are retiring from the military to other states. And those veterans that come here bring federal dollars with them. All of their military pensions are federal. Their health care is federal. They can go back to school. That's federal dollars. I'll have to be corrected, but I think this is true, that even their children can go to college and there's federal dollars there. So there's a tremendous benefit that comes to Minnesota that we don't measure. In addition, many of these people are not in their 60s or 70s. They're in their late 30s and 40s and will come to Minnesota with another career ahead of them. And some of these that have been very successful will take that same success and start a business and create jobs. And so all of those things come to Minnesota, but we don't measure them. Then they pay property taxes, they pay sales taxes, they pay income taxes on that other career. And so, you know, my gut tells me that this is not a revenue loss to Minnesota, but a revenue gain. Wisconsin did this in 2001, and I believe you all have a handout, but in 2001, the difference between revenues coming to Wisconsin versus Minnesota was 0.8 million a month different. So since 2001 till now, the difference in revenues from federal dollars through the veterans going to that state are five times greater in Wisconsin. So there clearly has been a shift to of veterans going other places other than Minnesota in just that short period of time. And last year, I believe it was, Iowa has now moved over and has done the same thing. And so there's certainly this is a pro-veterans bill, but it's also an economic benefit bill to Minnesota and potentially a job creation bill to Minnesota. And so I've got a number of people that want to testify, and so I'll keep my points to those. But this is the golden opportunity year. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Senator Gazelka, are there any questions to begin with for Senator Gazelka or comments? Then we'll hear from your testifiers. Who would like to go first?
Madam Chair, my name is Ralph Donay. I'm a retired Master Gunnery Sergeant from the United States Marine Corps. I was in for 30 years, worked at Headquarters of Marine Corps as the senior avionics enlisted member. And I would just like to point out a couple of things. The good senator took most of my thunder from the information that I've given him over the past year or so. Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to point out that Minsky loves me because I came back to Minnesota, and my tuition, books, and everything was paid for with federal dollars. He was correct. Now they have changed that same bill so that your dependents can use that same money to go to college. And Minsky loves us for that also. I'd like to point out that we have a high rate of volunteering in our communities. I'm on the board of directors for the North Star Boys Choir. It's a world-renowned choir that toured Austria, Germany, and Italy 2 years ago. We have a high education rate in the military. If you stay in for 20 years or more, you're basically required to go to college in order to get promoted. So we want those people to come back to Minnesota. And last but not least, last year in the House committee, I was asked by one of the representatives there why I choose to live in Minnesota if Wisconsin and all these other states around us are so good. I smiled at him and said, because this is where Mama wants to live. That's why I am in Minnesota. I would love to bring more of my fellow second career military folks here. Unfortunately, my daughter and son-in-law will not reside in the state of Minnesota because of our retirement tax. Needless to say, as a 30-year Marine, he was a 26-year Marine, and he's not coming back either. And in past years, on many of the committees that I testified at, there was one or more people on the committee that said, I'm in the same boat. My daughter or my son is not coming back to Minnesota. So with that, I'd like to, any questions you have about the chart, I put it together. One last thing, in 2004, the people over age 65 in Minnesota was at like 42%. This year is at 53%. So the people who have spent 20 or more years in the service, that age group is getting older and older and older, and it's kind of obvious that we're not replacing them. Thank you, Madam Chair, and any committee members, if you have any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Donay. Any questions or comments? The next witness, please.
Madam Chair and committee members, my name is Donald Roden, Master Sergeant, United States Air Force, retired. I enlisted after 19 days after graduating from Osseo High School. My first assignment was Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota. And for those 4 years, I paid Minnesota taxes and enjoyed the benefit of the exemption, the $5,000 for military pay for living outside the state of Minnesota. 1980, I re-enlisted and was reassigned to Alaska, and also in doing my taxes, found out that exemption was done away with. So I had to pay full taxes on my retirement, and not living in the state of Minnesota could see no real benefit of staying in a Minnesota resident. I immediately after putting my taxes in the mail, went down to Fairbanks, Alaska, got an Alaskan driver's license, registered to vote, and for the next 18 years, I was an Alaskan resident. I lived in Alaska, Nebraska, Alaska, and Texas. At the age of 40, I retired after 22 years of active service. I could have stayed in Texas, and they pay no income tax down there. I could have moved back to Alaska, but I chose to move back to Minnesota to help my elderly mother, who my father passed away while I was on active duty. So I chose to move back here. Now, that's fine, and taxation just on military retirement is one thing, but as the senator said, it's not just that. It's the taxation that gets added to the income that I've earned in the 16 years now since I've retired. So it increases my tax bracket to a much higher level. So that's one thing. Also, another part of it is, and I know that we've all been aware of it, and maybe those that haven't served don't really see it as much as those that have served, but over the past several years, our cost of living increases for our retirement pay. There were several years we didn't get a cost of living increase because of the federal government decided not to give us one. And this year we got a 1.7% pay raise, and yet cost of living is even greater than that. So really our retirement value is losing money, and then we're taxed on top of that. So it's got a huge impact. My wife's in a PhD program at the University of Minnesota and about to graduate, and she's looking at a job possibly at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. And for a while I was thinking, I really don't want to do that, but I'm thinking more about that. Moving to Madison, taking my business, and moving to Wisconsin to where I don't have to pay taxes on my retirement. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Ms. Roden? Are there others here who we should testify?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, my name is Bill Rout. I'm a retired Air Force colonel. I served on active duty for 25 years with the United States Air Force flying. During that time, I moved 11 times. Prior to coming here, I was in Florida. Again, we've already mentioned that there are no state taxes down there. But I love Minnesota. I spent every summer of my life up in the North Woods at my parents' cabin. So I made the 12th move up here, and I came up here in the summer of 13 and bought a house. I was told by multiple people I was absolutely nuts. And what was I absolutely thinking? And that is exactly where it comes down to. Somebody once told me that expect nothing, blame no one, do something. That's why I'm here. I think that this can be better, and I think that this can be more military friendly, especially to our retirees, to bring them in here. So why am I here? I'm trying to persuade you to carry forth this to try and take away and exempt the military retirees' taxes. Less than 1% of the U.S. population serves in the United States military now. That's not a lot of Minnesotans. We have the military is unique compared to the other services, or for that matter, public services, I mean. It's the only one that you can be non-volunteered to go into harm's way. The other ones you can quit. You can't quit in the military. 15 other states, we've already pointed out, have this exemption already. This state used to have this exemption as well. But not only that, multiple other states have other options as well. If you don't even go down the entire path, then there should be at least something to encourage. It would establish Minnesota as a patriotic state, honoring the sacrifices. It would be an inducement to serve, whether in active duty forces or in the Minnesota National Guard. It could be considered a reward for so many serving to avoid that choose to go into the military as opposed to those who avoid. And it could be shown to atone for many of our military veterans that came back from Vietnam that were shown a disservice when they came back. And the state benefits from this more than anything else, as already stated by the previous two testimonies that you're collecting from me and I'm well working right now, but you're also going to collect from many other people. Lastly, I want to bring up three examples of friends of mine and colleagues, or one of my brothers I'll bring up last, and why this really does exist, that people are not coming here and may or may not be leaving. One of them is a colleague of mine that retired 7 years ago after 23 years in the United States Air Force. He grew up in Minnesota. He went to the University of Minnesota and graduated from there before going into the Air Force, and he currently lives across the St. Croix River in Hudson. Why? Because he said, I'm not paying. He was one of the ones who told me I was nuts. The second one is a friend of mine who flies with me down for FedEx, and he lives in Mankato. And he, although not from Minnesota, loves Minnesota, his wife is, and grew up and her family's always been in Mankato. Her parents have recently passed on. And that's The only thing that has kind of kept him here, because as he told his wife, it's fiscally irresponsible for him as a military retiree to stay here when he has so many other options. And they're planning on leaving. And the last is my little brother. My little brother has 23 years in the Air Force. He's currently in Washington, D.C. right now. Anybody who's been to the Duluth Air Show may have seen him a few years ago because he flew for the Thunderbirds back then. And he wants to do like me and retire up here. His wife, she loves it up here, but she said, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. We can go back to, of all places, our home where we grew up, in Buffalo, New York, New York State, of all places, because they won't tax his military retirement. Now, what I ask of you is help me to convince my friend across the river to move back to his state. Tell my friend who lives down in Mankato, don't move away. And then I want to bring my brother and my sister-in-law and their kids up to Minnesota so they can enjoy it as much as I do. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Rout. I have one more person. If you'd identify yourself for the record, we're pleased to have your testimony.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Jim Beckman. I live in Faribault. I actually grew up in Iowa. I served 28 years on active duty in the Army, lived all over the United States in a few lovely foreign countries. My wife is also a retired active duty military member. She retired after 20 years as a nurse. I went to school here in Minnesota. My wife is a Minnesota native, and that's kind of what brought us back to Minnesota. Obviously, from a personal perspective, I'd loved if my military retirement was tax-exempt and I didn't have to pay state income tax on it. But I approach this, I agree with what all the other testifiers have said, but I also approach it from a policy perspective, I think, for the state of Minnesota. What you want to do is bring in quality people that are going to continue to pay taxes and increase jobs and can provide employers and employment to the Fortune 500 countries that are or companies that are in the state. And I think that's why it's important to entice military members back to the state, more of a policy perspective than it is about giving money back to military members, you know, for their service. Military retirees, generally, if you're retiring, if you're an NCO, you've got at least an associate's degree. Most of that I know have bachelor's degree. Most officers retire with, obviously, you had to have a bachelor's degree. Most have at least a master's degree. Those individuals are going to bring a unique skill set back to the state that employers are looking for. They're good citizens. I've heard that mentioned before. I volunteer coached my local high school for 6 years with the football program. I'm currently serve on the school board. Most military members are used to being involved in their communities and making them better, and I think that's very important. One of the things I think, you know, we like to quote Sun Tzu, you know, great Chinese warrior, and he always says you got to know your enemy. I think in this case we'll change that a little bit, and you need to know your competition. And I think it's been mentioned that there are 9 states, I believe, last count, that don't tax any income. They have no income tax. There's currently 14 states, including Iowa, which just became tax-free for military retirement income. In 2016, Missouri goes tax-free for military income. And then on the rest of the states, I counted 6 that I would call very generous tax exemption. Either 50-75% of the military retirement income is tax-exempt, or up to $41,000, which would cover most military retirees' income. So I think it's a long-term investment in Minnesota to exempt military income and try to entice more and more people to come back here and make this a long-term home for them and their families. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for Mr. Rout?
For Mr. Senator Gazelkin or anybody.
Okay. Could I just make some comments first, uh-huh. Senator DC? Uh-huh. You know, Senator Gazelkin, and to your testifiers, the issues of support for veterans in Minnesota is also like with previous discussion of support for giving tax relief in the estate tax system. And I think it's important as we talk about this to keep before us what we have been doing, and this may be the coup de grace, but it's not that we again are coming out of a black box where we have done nothing. And I think it's, as I understand it, the retirement exemption would be available to those who have served for at least 20 years and not to all veterans. And certainly Senator Gazelka has offered similar bills in the past. Some these provisions obviously are scalable, and your bill last year was a phase in and was also scalable. We have last year did an extension of the current military tax credit that went up to $750 for any veteran receiving a pension or retirement pay for service in the military. And that is where we got rid of the length of service requirement. It's not just those who have 20 years, but that military pay pension credit was available to all veterans. And we also were very cognizant of the challenges and tensions that a number of active duty folks have in meeting Minnesota tax deadlines, in particular property taxes, and to make sure that while they're deployed and should be concentrating on their military assignments and responsibilities, that they're not penalized for delinquency in making their property tax payments. We also provided a tax exemption to almost 1,000 more Minnesota military members by extending the existing military pay subtraction, not pension, but the pay subtraction to Minnesota National Guard members who were not previously eligible for that. And in particular, we allowed surviving spouses of 100% disabled veterans of military members that were killed in the line of duty to take advantage of the state property tax exclusions for three additional years. And there's some additional legislation that's coming forward to even lengthen that time period. And I think from some quarters there's a proposal to make it permanent as long as the spouse stays in that same residence. That's what was done within the tax system. And then there have been other initiatives in 2013 and 2014 in the budget divisions of the Finance Committee that provided additional funding for job opportunities for returning veterans and so forth. So this is not, again, something that we are doing a 180-degree turn to say, well, we haven't done anything, and now let's do something. This is in the toolbox of opportunities for us to recognize the service that Minnesotans have given to their country on our behalf. It is not, again, as Senator Skoy pointed out with regard to the estate tax, it is not without considerable cost. Mm-hmm. But I think it is, I'm a co-author on the bill, I do think it is something worth serious consideration. One of your testifiers indicated that there was a point at which the military pensions were excluded from income, and then that changed, and all of a sudden they're back in income. That happened, as I recall, in 1987 when we did major tax reform in Minnesota, and it was not, it was a pension exclusion period that had been part of the Minnesota income tax system that was removed, and in its place, all taxpayers paid at a lesser rate. Now, that's that's in the past, and we can talk about how those burdens again have crept up, so that that's no longer a that's no longer meaningful. That we lowered the rates, which I support, lower the rates, broaden the base, in every tax system, but it was not done just to raise money. In fact, it was an attempt at being revenue neutral to lower all income tax rates and to simplify our system by getting rid of the pension exclusion, period. So that's just a little bit of background, but we're happy to look at this proposal yet once again.
Yeah, Madam Chair, if I can just one comment to that, too, because I said at the beginning I wanted to make it clear I think this has been bipartisan and needs to be bipartisan. I didn't want anything misinterpreted from anybody about that, because
I'm on the bill.
Yes, and the one thing I don't think was really stressed, though, is Minnesota is not on the map. When a veteran is retiring, they have all kinds of data that's presented to them about where to go, and Minnesota is definitely not on that map as far as a place to go. So whatever we do, it should be in the end game, it should be that we get into that place where Minnesota is a destination where veterans say, well, that Minnesota is a good state. And right now it's not saying that, so I'm saying whatever we need to do that is what I want to do. I don't want to lose any more veterans.
Sure. Further discussion or questions? Now, Senator Dietzig.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I'd like to thank all of you for your service. I do appreciate it. I'm sure all of us do. So thank you. To Senator Kozelka on line 432, it is compensation received from a pension or other retirement pay. Is other retirement pay for people who haven't done the full 20 years, or what is other retirement pay?
Madam Chair, Senator Dietzig,
Senator Kozelka.
At this point, I don't know that I can answer that, why I had counsel draft it, so I should know, but I don't know.
Okay.
Ms. Paula, can you help us?
Madam Chair, I don't know specifically what other retirement pay refers to, but I can certainly find out.
Madam President, I've been told that it's medical pay.
Okay. I have a follow-up.
Okay, Senator Dietzig.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Okay, that helps that. And this is just, it might sound stupid, but do you get Social Security, or do you pay Social Security tax? And I ask this because, like, Minneapolis Fire and Police do not pay Social Security, and so they do not get Social Security, so their pension is in, they don't get a pension and Social Security, so I'm just wondering, I don't know this. Does the military pay, do you pay Social Security taxes, and do you get Social Security when you're in the military?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions? Senator Skoy?
Well, Madam Chair, not a question, but just to Senator Kozelka.
Sure.
Good conversation. You know, we've talked about this a lot in the past. And the only thing that I would mention to you and your testifiers, we did a lot of comparison to our surrounding states in the testimony. And, you know, always we want to be competitive with our surrounding states. But we'll have to try to tease out the impact that this would have on our competitiveness, because currently when you look at Minnesota, we have lower unemployment rates, we have higher per capita incomes, growth, census growth is better, our population growth is better than the surrounding states. I mean, the only state that is growing a little faster is North Dakota, and partly because of the Bakken oil field. So, you know, we're going to tease this stuff out, but we have to be, it's a complex issue, of course, and we want to have an understanding of what these impacts are. But just want you to kind of, as you're bringing this bill forward and we're going through the process, you know, keep in mind that much of why people want to live in Minnesota here is because we do other things very well also.
Any other comments? And thank you, Senator Skoy. Any other comments? Senator Thompson moves that Senate file. Now I've lost the number.
40
be laid over for possible consideration in the omnibus tax bill. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Kozelka, and your testifiers. The schedule for next week, the division will not be meeting next week, and neither will the full committee. Our next action will probably take place on the Senate floor with regard to the conformity bill, House File 6. There being no further business before the committee, we stand adjourned.
I'm sorry.